Welcome to the My Money podcast number 11 from helpmetosave.com. I'm Karen Bryan, the editor of Help Me to Save, where you'll find tips on ways to save and make the most of your money so you can get the life you want. In this edition of the My Money podcast, I'll discuss several recent articles from Help Me to Save. I wrote a couple of articles last week for International Women's Day. There's a site, Women's Money Week. So I wrote a couple of articles, one for Help Me to Save and one for the main site. I also wrote about working from anywhere. Is this really feasible? And why you should always carry at least two bank cards with you. And also I looked at a UK budget holiday option for families at Haven Holidays. So starting off with my post on Help Me to Save about money in your 50s. Now, I'm in my early 50s, so this was a good post for me to write just to kind of clarify my own thoughts on how I'm organising my finance in my 50s. Now, although this post was written from the perspective of females, there's still a lot relevant to guys in it as well. And in my opinion, the 50s are a very important time for financial planning. You have to start really thinking about how you're going to organise the rest of your working life and your retirement. And your 50s can also be an opportunity in between the time you're tied bringing up kids and being involved in elder care. Now, I was 50 years old when our sons became financially independent after they found jobs on completion of their university courses. This enabled me to give up my part-time day job and concentrate on being a full-time online publisher. However, because I've been a freelance worker for decades, I have to give serious thought to how I'm going to fund my retirement. I suppose I'm typical of many women in a way that haven't amassed decent pension entitlements, even if they have been in jobs where a final salary scheme has been on offer. Maybe women have had time out, worked part-time, haven't gone for promotion, so they don't have such a big pension to look forward to. So in the UK, there are three types of pension provision. Women and men my age in their early 50s in the UK are due now to receive their state pension at the age of 66. In order to get a full pension, you need to have paid 30 years of national insurance contributions. But if you fall short of this, you can pay voluntary contributions to make up that 30 years. Fortunately, I've already paid my 30 years, so I'm due to get a full state pension, but it also means in some ways I'll be paying national insurance contributions for quite a while, not really getting any benefit from them. But never mind, you can't get a system that suits everyone. As I mentioned earlier, some people may have an occupational pension scheme at work. Now, my husband was able to pay in additional voluntary contributions to increase his pension, and he was on a final salary scheme based on his earnings and how many years service he'd done. And you can get tax relief onto payments into a pension scheme, but obviously the best option is one where your employer is paying in and a final salary rather than being dependent on the stock market. And the third pension option is the stock market related stakeholder pension. Again, you get tax relief on these payments, but there's no guarantee of the value of your pension pot. Now, I've got a stakeholder pension, and I'm not sure it was a wise decision. Time will tell, but with the stock market not doing that well, plus annuity rates falling and falling even more with this more of the UK government's quantitative easing, it's really hard to plan your retirement on a stakeholder pension because you just don't know what it's going to be worth. So, pensions, yeah, a bit of a thorny issue unless you're in a good final salary scheme with your employer paying. Then work options. Obviously, if you've got a good final salary scheme to look forward to, you may be able to decide, as long as the goalposts don't change in that, that you're going to retire at a specific age and you know what your income will be. It'll be guaranteed and hopefully index linked. However, some people might not really want to retire at the official retirement age, even if their retirement is sufficient. But in my case, because I'm not expecting a great pension and because I don't have to be that physically fit for my jobs, as long as I can sit at the computer and I'm compass mentis, I'm planning to work really indefinitely, at least part-time, to give me some interest, mental stimulation and a bit of extra income. But of course, that's dependent on the type of job you do and your health. So tax planning is another thing that you should be starting to look at in your 50s. In the UK, inheritance tax kicks in at £325,000. Anything over that is taxed at 40%. However, any money that you give away is not taxed if it was given more than 7 years before your death, and you can also give up to £3,000 a year in gifts with no inheritance tax liability. So it's tricky because in some ways it's a good thing to help your kids when they're young rather than them having to wait to inherit from you when, you know, they're 60 and you die at 85 or 90 or something. It could be a bit late then. But you don't want to give away too much either and leave yourself short, but you don't want your kids to have to pay inheritance tax either. So that's another tricky one. You don't know how long you'll live, etc. Yeah, there are experts who can give you advice, but it's still a bit of a guessing game. Another good way to avoid paying tax legally is to save in a tax-free cash ISA. This is more flexible than a pension, and the current cash ISA limit per year is £5,340 per person. The annual limit is uprated by the rate of inflation. So if you saved the maximum in ISA for 10 years, that would give you a nest egg of well over £50,000. And at least you know what that's worth. Of course, if interest rates are lower than inflation, you're not doing very well. But you have to have a multi-pronged approach, not rely totally on anything. So I hope that that's been a bit interesting for people in their 50s, just for things that you want to start thinking about. So the other post been on Help Me to Save this week are Work From Anywhere, where I discuss, is it really feasible to be able to work from anywhere? Well, I suppose initially they have to have a decent turn. Now, this can be tricky if you're on the road, if you're travelling. It can even pose problems if you have a permanent base, as I do. We've had a couple of weeks when their home broadband connection was down. And although I have a USB modem as a backup option, the signal is not fantastic, so it's much slower trying to do work. I'm not talking about uploading videos or anything, just doing tweets, Facebook, uploading odd photos, things like that. It just takes an awful lot longer. So that is one issue that can be a make or break, because obviously if you're traveling around and you do some sort of freelance work, you need to be in touch with clients, you need to be able to deliver by the deadlines that you've given, and if you can't get online, it's going to be really, really frustrating. So as I'm a self-employed online publisher and blogger, in theory I can work from anywhere that has a connection. We currently live in Berwick-upon-Tweed in northeast England. And we moved here in 2006 from central Scotland when my husband found a job in Newcastle-upon-Tyne. The only things I had to do when we moved home were get new business cards with my change of address and phone number and change these details on my website. So that was a lot easier than if I had a job in Stirling and then we moved to Berwick, 200 miles return. I could hardly commute every day. I would have had to find another job. So that's one big advantage of being able to work from anywhere. For me, another advantage of being location independent is you can choose the location where you want to live. Some people, location independent means they're on the road, they're travelling around anywhere they're on the road. For me, it's just that I can work from a base anywhere in the world I want to live. So if you don't have to live within striking distance of your job, it can make it easier for you to get the life you want. You can live in a country or a region where rent and house prices are lower. And you can save money compared to, say, paying rent and mortgage in an expensive city like London. And if your living expenses, for example, housing costs, and you don't have to commute if you're home-based, are lower, then you can either live on a lower income or save more of your earnings towards retirement. For me, a major downside to being a location-independent worker is the fact that I don't think you can beat personal face-to-face communication. Yeah, I have lots of virtual contact through social networks like Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and webcam Skype calls. But if where you live is a bit remote, like Berwick-upon-Tweed, it restricts the number of events, networking opportunities you can attend. As a travel blogger, it also limited the number of trips I could do because so many of the trips were out of London, and often the host wouldn't cover my cost to get to and from London, overnight stays for early departure, late arrivals back in London. And also, if you're trying to pitch for new clients or sponsorship, meeting up with the potential clients and sponsors in person can increase your chances of getting the contract. So yeah, like everything, being location independent has some good points. So yeah, you just have to look at it from your own personal circumstances. Now, thinking about the squeeze on household budgets, are you going on a summer holiday this summer? Well, the cost may be putting you off, especially going abroad with peak price flights and also school holidays. Just the prices go sky high. But what we used to do with our kids when they were young was go to UK holiday parks. The one we went to most often were the Haven parks. And we found they were pretty good value for money. Of course, living in Scotland, we had the option of going on holiday to the English camps the first 2 weeks in July before the English school holidays start. They begin earlier in Scotland, so we were able to get some pretty good deals. But considering that all your entertainment, you know, kids' clubs, evening entertainment, quite good swimming pools and everything are included in the price, I think they are good value, and if you can get some voucher codes or cash back, then it is an option for a fairly cheap summer holiday in the UK. And yesterday I read that there were some problems with debit cards issued by the Yorkshire and Clydesdale banks. And to me, this underlined how important it is that you always carry at least two bank cards with you. Now, they have to be from different banks, but different banks is not enough. For example, Yorkshire and Clydesdale are actually part of the same company, although they've got different names. So, yeah, you had a bank from a card from a different bank, but they're the same company. So you need to double check that they're totally different companies. So if one bank's financial institution's computer system goes down, then at least you've got a backup card, because you don't want to be caught out not being able to pay. And if it's a debit card, if you can't pay with it, the chances are you won't be able to use it at a cash machine either. So do take at least two cards from different institutions, totally different companies, with you when you're out and about. I hope that you've enjoyed listening to this edition of the My Money podcast. Do join us again soon. You can read all the articles in full on the site helpmetosave.com. You can also sign up for our free monthly Money Saver newsletter. Or if you prefer to listen to the podcast, you can subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. Do join us again soon, and thank you for listening.